Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
As if Chicago needed another reminder, Deshaun Watson and the Texans play Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs Sunday during the Bears' bye week, would Mitch Trubisky, the quarterback taken ahead of both QBs in the 2017 draft, be better, worse, or the same if he had landed with either the Texans or the Chiefs?
Yeah, that's a fun question. I think he would be much of the same. I don't think he'd be a significantly different player or a significantly better player. You can argue that the first year with the Bears was wasted because he was in a scheme that obviously they're not running any longer. So if he had gone to the Chiefs, he would have known that he'd been in the same scheme. But having said all that, I think what's curious is I wonder what the other way around would have looked like. You know, they did a redraft. I think ESPN did a redraft of the 2017 draft, and they had the Bears taking Myles Garrett because they had these two quarterbacks going off the board 1-2, and the Bears don't get a chance to trade up, and they wind up with Myles Garrett. So that's obviously, that would mean you didn't get the Mac deal. If you got Deshaun Watson or you got Patrick Mahomes, would that mean that you wouldn't get that? Does that mean John Fox would still be the coach? Does that mean that you wouldn't have made that deal for Khalil Mack?
Probably wouldn't have Mac.
You know, so I think it's hard to kind of wish your life away a little bit, but I don't think that coaching is the problem with Mitchell Trubisky. I think that Mitch is the problem.
It's curious because I think when you look at the evolution of both these guys with Watson and Mahomes, they both benefited from whatever experiences they went through, and I think Mahomes benefited from watching, and Watson, I think, just has gradually gotten better as he's gotten healthier. Let's look at the Chiefs situation. I do think, though, Mitch had to play right away. And he started 12 games as a rookie. And it's odd to look at these three guys and to look at Mitch Trubisky as the most experienced starter. He started more regular season games than any of the three. But it's hard to tell because he is clearly third on a list of which guy you'd rather have. I think that if he had gone to Kansas City, he might have had the weapons, more weapons, that to use. He might have been in a better structure quicker, and he might have avoided some of the bad habits that you've seen develop. I don't know that you could have improved his accuracy. I'm not sure, but you could have improved maybe his confidence and maybe his how quickly he's grown because of the way that what the receivers would have done with the football after he delivered it. So the Chiefs probably would have made his NFL experience a little bit more promising and future a little more promising had he been there. The Texans kind of structured the same as the Bears, so I wouldn't say necessarily that would have been the case. But I do think that we might think more of Mitch Trubisky had he ended up with the Chiefs and this been his third year in the NFL than maybe than we do with him with the Bears.
Mully, my brain did exactly what yours did there in terms of, would Watson or Mahomes be worse had they ended up with the Bears as opposed to if Mitch were on the other teams? Because you did. You had year one with Fox and Dowell Loggins, then coming in and learning the new system. So would they look as good if they got drafted by the Bears as opposed to where they wound up? I think, and you hit it on the head too, David, the fact that he started more regular season games than these guys, and yet, and I understand this is just Bears fans trying to give support to their guy and hold out hope that maybe there's a turnaround coming, but you don't ever hear them say, well, Mahomes, he's only started 20 games in his career. You got to give him time to develop. Like, what? He's the MVP of the league, because he's good. I'm afraid that, what we've seen out of Mitch is what we're going to get, and it's not going to get all that much better. And I'm reminded of a lot of people during the lead up to this draft not necessarily about the Bears taking Mahomes, but rather about Deshaun Watson, who had played in two straight college title games, was a stud at Clemson, etc. We all knew all about Deshaun Watson coming out, and yet, you know, the guy who started 13 games at North Carolina was the second overall pick. That's what I think is going to get Bears fans if this ends up like this in the long run.
Well, luckily, Ryan Pace drafts quarterback every year, so there are more options behind Mitch. Oh, that's right. He didn't do that, even
Tyler
though he
Brabe
said so.
Back on the practice squad.
Oh, that's great. That's good for him. Well, first of all, you know, I'm not the biggest football fan compared to some of the other people on this show, but, I mean, my God, Texans.
So you don't like football. You don't like the NHL. I mean,
I didn't say I didn't like football.
Like
I said that there
football.
Are bigger football fans on this show than I am. And I think that's a fair statement. I like football. It's fine. But Chiefs Texans is appointment television. I mean, not only for the fact that
don't do that to yourself, Bears fans. Go rake the leaves.
Not only that, one of these guys should have probably been on the Bears, and it's not too hindsighty to say that either, because Mitch Trubisky, you know, did just have the 1 year at North Carolina, and whatever they saw in him, I don't know that they didn't see it in Watson or Mahomes. David, I like the point that you bring up about Mitch, and he's played more games than either one of these guys. That is insane to me when people still insist on saying, oh, he's a young quarterback, he's inexperienced, he's just coming along, it's his second year in the offense, and all of the excuses that people want to grab for this guy. He's not that young. He's not that inexperienced. And S-Boy, I kind of agree with you, too. I'm thinking this is what we're going to have with Mitch. Now, he is still, there could be, you know, another level there, you know, at least when you compare Mitch and Chase Daniel. With Chase Daniel, he's not going to get any better. With Mitch, at least there's the thought that there could be another level that we haven't seen yet. But at some point, you know, optimism, it becomes a little misguided. So if Mitch were in Kansas City, if he were in Houston, you know, I don't think those teams would be doing as well as they are right now. I don't think a ton of this is on Matt Nagy. You can criticize him for a lot of things, for not running the ball enough, not opening up the offense. But, you know, he sees
that visor. That visor's got to go.
The visor. Yeah, people have turned on the visor as well. You can criticize him for not airing out the offense, letting Mitch loose and hucking the ball 50 times a game. But he knows what Mitch is. You know, if he doesn't trust the guy to do that, then he doesn't trust the guy to do that. So, you know, what can you say? It's going to be an exciting game, I'm sure, on Sunday. A little painful for a Bears fan, so I can understand if you want to turn away.
Well, the fantasy implications in that game are going to be off the chart, right? That's going to be a fun one to watch if you're into that kind of thing. As far as to answer the question, I think systems, weapons, coaches make quarterbacks. I mean, quarterbacks in different systems do better, and the weapons around them do better, and what the coaches let them do makes them better. I still don't understand it. This goes all the way back to Cutler, and I know a different stat. Like, is it a Bears thing? Like, why are the Bears against letting the quarterbacks move around a little bit more in the pocket? Move to their right. It seems like no matter who, and like on defense, the Bears can't cover tight ends, and on offense, they don't let the quarterbacks roll to the right or roll to the left and throw the ball. And Cutler was better when he was doing that, and I think Mitch would be better. I don't know that Mitch would be an MVP Mitch, to quote one guest on this show, if he was in Kansas City.
MVP Mitchell.
You know who I think would be best, honestly, in any of the three situations? I think Deshaun Watson, actually, right now, would be the best on all three. No matter where you put Deshaun, I think he'd be doing about what he's doing right now. Now,
Dustin,
he does have
Dustin,
a brilliant wide receiver.
I respect Deshaun Watson as much as anybody, but watch Patrick Mahomes. He will play in any system.
He throws the ball like it's just right on target,
yeah.
Always. His accuracy is beyond human comprehension.
Okay.
From weird spots and weird angles and no-look passes.
You know,
it's extraordinary.
Watson is a tremendous talent as well. He goes in any system, but the ceiling for Mahomes,
he's the best one of the lot.
Best of the three.
I just don't know that Mahomes throwing to a guy who doesn't even want to barely get on the field at tight end is going to be like throwing to Travis Kelce. That's all.
Fair enough. And a shot.
There's a lot of questions in there.
The Cubs interview with David Ross reportedly lasted 4 hours, or half as long as Joe Girardi spent with the Brain Trust a day before. What, if anything, does that tell you?
It tells me that they know David Ross a lot better than they know Joe Girardi. Maybe they did. Maybe Girardi's included a workout, calisthenics, because he's a really fit guy. I don't know why they spent 8 hours talking to Joe Girardi. I don't know what you talk about for 8 hours. Getting to know people, maybe other people were involved. Ross is an employee, so it was basically not a four-hour interview as much as probably a four-hour meeting. And, you know, what do you want to do? And I would be shocked if that was the first time that they talked about and discussed him being the manager of the Chicago Cubs with Rossi in that moment at that interview. So it's just a familiarity thing. They know him. They didn't have to cover new ground. They didn't have to kind of explore things that with Girardi or that they did with Girardi. So I'm not sure to read much into it. I don't think it says anything negative. I'm not sure it says anything positive either. I just think it's a product of just having known the guy for as long as they have. And with Joe Girardi, there's still maybe a feeling out process. Maybe they needed to feel more comfortable with him, because that is a big question with Joe Girardi. Can they work together? And maybe after 8 hours, they're still wondering. And if they are, that's a problem. But with Rossi, they know. They know what they're getting. 4 hours was just about right.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. I think it's about what you know and what you don't know. What I find curious is 8 hours with Joe Girardi. I mean, conceivably, you could have him go over every single player that they have or that they plan to go after or they like and get his opinion on that and get his scouting report on that and get all the information that he has on that, as opposed to a guy that can just parrot back the information that you've given him already, right? He knows. Joe Girardi does not know how they feel about all these players. David Ross does. I'm sure David Ross has a really good insight into exactly what the front office thinks about every guy on the roster and every guy that is might be able to come up and all the rest of it.
Or about to be traded.
Well, I think that what their value might be and all that stuff, he knows what they think. I don't think that Joe Girardi goes in there knowing what they think, and they can get a lot of information out of Joe because of the way that he works the league and the stuff that he knows from his travels that's probably a little bit different than theirs. So part of this might be just getting a differing opinion and figuring out what he has to say and what the baseball consensus, according to the people he's talking to, is about various guys and comparing their opinion against that. So I think there's a lot more value in talking to Joe Girardi. I don't know that that means he gets the job. I think it's quite obvious that that Rossi is the favorite and all the rest of it. But, I think the very fact that the general manager calls him Rossi kind of makes it difficult to
and when they went to Starbucks, he didn't have to ask him what he wanted. He already knew
his order.
That Rossi was the first free agent. You think about that pivotal offseason of 20 going into the 2015 season. The first free agent they signed wasn't John Lester. It was David Ross for 2 years and $5 million. And Theo said, "Hey, Lester or no Lester, we want this guy on our team." I mean, they know him. They love him. We already know this now. Of course, there's differences to managing the team versus knowing what a guy brings to the clubhouse and what he can do on the field. But I like your call, too, Molly, about picking Girardi's brain, because you don't have Joe Girardi in your office every day. You don't get to talk to him all the time. Here's a guy who's been in and around the league, managed and played at the highest levels for how many years? 30-something years now. So certainly some picking of his brain. Plus, he had a large binder. We know that for his interview. So they had lots of stuff to go over there. But I think the fact is that they already know Ross. They're already comfortable with Ross. I think at this point, you're comparing everyone to Ross, who, by all accounts, is the leader in the clubhouse for this job.
Well, the binder was also the first thing that came to mind for me. We don't know. We don't know the size of the binder. We don't know what's in the binder.
It's not the size of the binder. It's the information in it.
It is the contents wherein.
You're assuming it's only one, Kevin.
See, we don't know about that either.
Multiple binders.
Next time you guys have Joe Girardi on the program, our radio.com baseball insider, can ask him about the binder, because that's the most pressing thing to me personally. I think you guys were pretty spot on about it. They know David Ross. David Ross has been there forever, seemingly. Seems like he's been on the Cubs or with the Cubs organization for as long as any of us can remember, as a player, as an executive, as a ballroom dancer. You know, as a peanut butter enthusiast.
Wasn't he on Family Feud?
Was he on The Feud as well?
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, David Ross. Well, if you want the celebrity manager, you know, you got rid of Joe. I guess
you want the cheap celebrity manager.
You want to go a little bit on the cheap and bring in somebody who's not quite as recognizable, not quite as accomplished, but I guess he was on Dancing. He didn't win Dancing with the Stars, did he? It's usually an athlete that wins that thing, although he's kind of he's a catcher. So, you know, his knees probably weren't as...
He's no Jerry Rice.
We need more guys like Lamar Odom on that show. That's what we need.
Hey, Lamar Odom was full of energy when he was on that, which I don't know how that could have been possible. I'll just leave it there.
A few digs there.
You don't stop.
Well, I believe that the interview took half the amount of time because Girardi's got like triple the experience, maybe. I mean, they could have been going over every single playoff series that Girardi either won or lost. You know, what it was like in New York, what it was like in Miami, you know, managing an all-star roster versus managing a roster where their parents and maybe their aunts and uncles knew who they were underneath those Marlena's uniforms, right? I mean, you don't even know who those guys were. Is he going to have a hair? Is he going to have a hair thing? Like, it can't reach the collar. Is he going to have a facial hair thing? Does he want guys covering up their tattoos?
I love that idea.
All these kinds of things.
I love that possibility because if Kimbrel has to shave, that is going to be fascinating.
It's a great question.
Does he allow him to get into that pose?
I hate the whole not shaving, clean haircut thing.
I know, but Dustin makes a good point.
The Yankees can do it because they're the Yankees, but...
Dustin, do you think that came up, though? Do you think that that's the kind of stuff came up in the first interview?
I mean, maybe I'm a bad interviewer, but it would for me. Like, again, I thought you guys asked a question that everybody... Listen, anybody can say, well, I knew that about him. I don't know who I'm imitating there, but anybody can guess.
Kind of sounds like me.
Anybody can guess. You know, but there was a thing going... There was a narrative that Joe Girardi was anti-metric. Okay? That was out there. Lots of people saying it, okay? So, you guys asked him, and he said, well, hold on, tap the brakes. I was known as Binder Joe. I didn't remember that. I mean, I do remember now, flashback, like, him looking through that binder. Maybe the binder was on that little three-wheeled...
Full disclosure, though, Dustin, when we had him on earlier this summer, and it was probably July, he referenced that, and I remembered that, and I think if we went back...
Maybe
and
I
listened,
was in Ohio then.
You might have been... No, I'm not being facetious. I think that... That has been out there but overlooked. It was overlooked about Joe Girardi, and I think that's why it was important for him to make the point. He's not averse to evidence.
He also has that get off my lawn old man kind of thing going, right? And he's a hard worker. He like goes to the gym. He pounds on the treadmill. He pounds on the elliptical. It looks like he's on the keto diet before the keto diet ever came about, right? I mean, this guy is – so how is he going to deal with millennials? How is he going to deal with younger people that have other interests other than just grinding out baseball and, you know, chewing on sunflower seeds all day?
Are millennials still playing? Because I think we're getting into an era now where what are they?
Gen Z would be the next era. But, I mean, every team in Major League Baseball is full of millennials. It's not like an exclusive Cubs thing.
Right. The whole That's league just, is. There's, are there any baby boomers still playing?
It's a great question.
Any surprise that the White Sox hired Frank Menachino as their new hitting coach? Is the term hired to be fired truer at that position than any other spot in baseball?
You know, it was actually referenced. He referenced that expression, the fact that hitting coaches. I didn't realize this, that 6 years in, Todd Severson was the second longest tenured hitting coach in Major League Baseball.
What a success he was.
But that's the point. I mean, you look at this, it is a job where, you know, it's an easy thing to get rid of a hitting coach, isn't it? So, you know, I don't know Frank. I'm not going to pretend to, but I've read his resume, and certainly he had worked in the system and worked with some of the young players that are going to be coming up and all the rest of it. So I think it's a wise hire to stay kind of in-house because of the fact of the familiarity that is already there, and now you got to kind of hit the ground running with some of the other players and maybe some guys you bring in, but for whatever reason we go immediately to the hitting coach, and the hitting coach is fired quite often, and I believe that was it 2 years or something like that? That's the lifespan of a hitting coach? That's crazy, right? And there'll be more guys fired with all the managerial changes that are going on within organizations, or if not fired, certainly moving around, moving pieces. So I just think it's, you know, it's an old joke here is the whole Greg Walker, you know, you got to fire Greg Walker. We heard that 1,000 times. It's just people jump on the hitting coach.
They do, because I think a lot of teams are in win now mode, and I think that's the Cubs' excuse, if you want to say that. But over the last couple years,
aren't they going through?
They go through them, and who knows what's next for Iaposi? And they got, you know, Chili Davis.
I wonder if they could redo it if they would have just kept John Mailey the whole time.
You wonder, right? You do, Kevin, because of the way that this whole core has stayed together. I think when you see a hitting coach and you see the turnover that exists with this profession, it's a lot of times consistent with rosters that turn over a lot. But right now, what you have in Menachino, and I hope that this is true with the White Sox, they're putting him in now because they have a core that they're going to grow with together. And they're about to go on a nice little run here with the same group of young hitters that are learning the same philosophy and maybe going through the same routine and learning from the same guy. And you have a unified voice, and maybe that's Menachino's. You hope that's the case. With Steverson, I don't know if it was a case of he was doing such a good job or he was just Kenny's guy. I think we'll always wonder that, because the White Sox have a reputation for holding on to guys and for a long, long time. And Don Cooper, the pitching coach emeritus, I mean, he is there forever. And with Menachino, though, it's, I think, more of a product of just having young hitters you think can grow together and bring you something, you know, meaningful to the South Side. And that's, you know, if you're going to win, you're going to win this way. And this is the unified philosophy under him.
Molly, I got a good chuckle out of your comment, because when I was covering the White Sox regularly about 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was, everything was Greg Walker's fault. That was it. The solution to all of our problems, White Sox fans. That Greg Walker, get rid of him. That's all we need. But no, I think this makes sense in that he was at Charlotte with a lot of the guys that are going to be part of this core, Madrigal and Louis Robert this past year. So he knows these guys already. He knows a lot of the young hitters, and you know he's coming up, and I'm sure that the thought by the White Sox is, hey, they're comfortable with Frank Menachino. He's done a nice job at Charlotte. Let's see, you know, what he can do with them up here at the big league level, based on that familiarity plus his experience as a player.
Yeah, well, first of all, I remember the name Frank Menachino. He had a couple good years with the Athletics, I believe, so that's a nice little start for him. Played in the bigs, always a good thing, you suppose. He's got a relationship with a lot of these guys, and I think with a hitting coach, even a pitching coach as well, the familiarity aspect is probably just as important as the technical aspects. I mean, guys are going to go up there during a game, take their at-bats, and they're going to be, you know, remembering what they were told from their coaches, but they're kind of going to want to be doing their own thing when they're up there. So it's more of a relationship thing, more of a familiarity thing. The fact that he knows Madrigal, Collins, Robert, a few of the other guys that have come through Charlotte over the past couple of seasons. And while I don't want to blame everything on Todd Steverson from the past couple of seasons, they were, you know, leading the league in singles, and they were down near the bottom of the league in walks and home runs. You need to
skew
that.
Dead last in major leagues in walks.
You need to skew that.
And they were 25th in home runs during this, whatever you want to call it, loaded juice ball era. Exactly.
Right. So, you know, it's I don't know if it's change for the sake of change, but you make the move, and you, hopefully this guy can have a rapport with some of these players that he knows well, and why the hell not?
Can he save Daniel Palka?
Only the Tigers and Royals scored fewer runs in the American League.
Says
than the
it
White
all right
Sox.
There, right? Nobody's going to save Daniel Palka, by the way.
he and I'm hitting.
Radio.com Sports presents Notre Dame USC live on the Radio.com app. Listen to this show all morning, everybody. Listen to this show all morning for your chance to win a pair of tickets to the game tomorrow night in South Bend. Courtesy Radio.com Sports. You can listen to every Notre Dame Fighting Irish game through the Notre Dame Sports channel on the Radio.com app. Well, I'm sure all the White Sox fans are happy that Kevin had the baseball card of the new hitting coach when he was a kid, or that sticker book of the Oakland A's. Did he have facial hair, Kevin? So we go back
no,
to the facial
he's
hair.
No, he's clean shaven.
Yeah,
guy.
I mean,
yeah.
Frank looks like he could grow a mustache. Like, he could shave at 5 and he could have a full beard at 5. And that's just a compliment to a guy that's got good facial hair. I think he'll fit in over there just fine. I think his connection with the younger guys that are coming up makes a whole lot of sense. You know, part of that question was the term hired to be fired. yes, I do think, especially at 35th and Shields. I mean, how long has our guy been the pitching coach over the 18 years? Right, Don Cooper is going to have his 18th season next year. Just wrapped up his 18th season, and I bet there's been 9 hitting coaches. It seems like in that time. So yeah, it's a tough position. It's a tough position because all these guys have their own hitting coach gurus and swing doctors and dads and uncles and brothers and maybe Jessica Mendoza telling them how to hit a baseball.
Oh, man.
Taking shots all morning this morning.
You are taking some shots. And Kevin, good research. I think Menachino was actually part of the A's during the advent of the Moneyball era.
That's right. He was one of the, he was on the ground floor of the operation.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball, yeah.
Or did you get here late?
Now that we have Astros, Yankees, and Cardinals, Nationals, who will win the pennant in the American and the National Leagues? How many games? And are you rooting for anybody?
I just think I want to let Dustin's comment about Jessica Mendoza kind of marinate there for a second.
Let it linger.
You know, last night
always
was...
Always like watching a baseball game, trying to find out and learn how to hit a softball.
Very interesting last night when you see how the Astros won and you find out that... They were, you know, taking advantage of a pitcher that was tipping his pitches again in the postseason.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Yu Darvish, and it reminded me just how dangerous this Astros team is, not just because of, you know, how good they are, but how smart they are. And I think it's hard to pick against them in this ALCS. I think they'll beat the Yankees. I think in the National League, it's fascinating to me that we're watching the Nationals, who in May were left for dead and talking about firing their manager. And the Cardinals, the dreaded Cardinals, if you're a Cubs fan. Great series, though. Mike Rizzo, the general manager for the Nationals, Chicago guy, made good. Kind of rooting for them. I like what they've done with their pitching staff in the postseason. They've gone for it. They've said, you know, we're just going to do things unorthodox manner. And I like the Nationals over the Cardinals. I like the Astros over the Yankees. And then we'll talk about who's favored in the World Series.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the Dodgers. I just think that they're going to find a way to get through this thing. No, I love the idea of the Nationals getting there, but I'm sorry. I think it's going to be the Cardinals, and I think that just to be a contrarian completely, I'll go with the Yankees and Cardinals.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to say Cardinals, so I'm going to say Nationals. And they do have, listen, they've been one of the hottest teams in baseball since what you pointed out, David, since May when they were left for dead, because they were dead in the water there.
I'm cheering for the Nationals.
Yeah, Davey Martinez, the Mike ex-Cub Rizzo. Factor. Mike Rizzo, the GM, is from Chicago, Holy Cross High School, and right here in the old Chicagoland area. I think the Nationals, with that pitching, specifically Strasburg and Scherzer, they can definitely win this series. They've been hot, so... And Anthony Rendon, by the way, making himself a lot of money this year as he'll hit free agency. In the AL, I've always thought Houston was the best team. That doesn't always mean that you advance. As it turns out, they did win in 5 last night, so they advance. I am definitely on the Astro bandwagon, and I will save everyone the World Series drama. That is my World Series selection as well.
I'm partial to really good starting pitching, so I'm hoping for Astros Nationals. When you look at the triad of hurlers, those teams feature Verlander, Cole Greinke versus Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin. I think is as good of a 3-on-3 there as you could possibly hope for if you're a fan of good starting pitching. So I'm rooting for Astros Nationals. I also think that those will be the teams to advance. I did pick the Nationals. I'm going to keep mentioning it. Before the season started, I picked the Nationals to win the World Series, so I have to stay with that, and I just think the
Astros... That's just your Eaton fandom coming
out. Yes, of course, a big Adam Eaton fan, as everybody knows.
He's a very good leader.
He follows 12-year-olds as well, and I think the Astros are just stacked top to bottom. Yankees might have the edge bullpen-wise, but if the Astros can get good starting pitching...
Astros aren't hitting well. I don't know if you've noticed, for a team that's that
good...
Hit
all right last night, 6 runs, that's going to do it for you, I think.
They had the first inning where they were obviously, he was tipping pitches, and they knew exactly what was coming, and they got, 5 straight hits to open the game? Kind of stopped scoring there. They only got 2 more runs.
I think they'll be all right.
Okay.
Well, if you've ever listened to this show over a period of time, and we thank you for doing that, you would know that I would be going for the Nationals and the Yankees, not the Cardinals or the Astros. The only reason I might not root for the Nationals is because Kevin then is going to be right and puffy-chested and all that stuff.
Wow, this is Sophie's choice for Dustin.
That's a hard question to ask.
It's a pretty important question to answer, though.
Do you believe the Bulls point guard competition is over or just getting started? Who should be and who should be the team's starting point guard?
Thomas Satoransky, the competition is over. It's Sato. He's going to end up being the starter. He should be the starter. He will start the majority of the games. They're going to bring the young guy along, and the other guy will be a defensive stopper with the second team.
If the other guy, Chris Dunn, is with the team, right. I think they should showcase him and make a deal.
What are you going to get for him?
I don't know, but I think we've seen that before. We know what he's capable of. They've moved on, and the Bulls have seen it as well. That's why they got Satoransky. You don't go out and get a restricted free agent and pay him $30 million to watch have him sit on the bench. You didn't draft Kobe White so he could get 8 minutes a game. Those two are your main guys. Sato starts. Kobe White comes in, key moments. Maybe he's your fourth quarter guy. I don't know. It depends how quickly he develops. But I don't see Chris Dunn playing a major role on this team.
Yeah, I'd like to think that Kobe White can win the job. But the reality is, David, and you just said it, it doesn't matter. White and Satoransky are both going to play a ton. And we'll see. I mean, I guess that's one of the wild cards is what does happen to Chris Dunn in all of this. You always have injuries. You always have weird stuff that happens during a season. But I would expect Satoransky and then White to play the majority of those minutes.
You know, I think it might be too soon for Kobe White. You know, he is extremely raw. You don't want to throw him in the starting gig right away. It should probably be Satoransky. He's a guy who has been around for a little bit. He's a big guy, big ball, good ball handler. He could play either position really in the backcourt. You might have a ball sharing situation with him and Zach if they're playing together as well, which could be interesting. Chris Dunn is not long for Chicago, I would imagine. And like I said, a little bit too soon probably for Kobe White. So give me Sato.
Boy, I watched way too much of the first half of that preseason game because I was interested in Zion. I did not like what I saw with Sato or whatever we're going to call him.
I like it.
Sato works.
I mean, the ball moves around, I guess. I mean, Chris Dunn is kind of a... he gets the ball and he owns it then, right? Like he's not moving. So if you want a guy who's going to move the ball around, then that's your guy, I guess. And I'm with Haw, like showcase Dunn and try to get him out of here because you don't want Kobe sitting on the end of the bench doing nothing. He's kind of a in between of those two guys where he also likes to show that he can shoot the ball and drive to the hole. But I mean, Sato on the floor all the time, his plus minus might be outrageous.
It's actually significantly better than the other guy.
Really?
Done.
He's pretty efficient. He's like I wouldn't overreact to the first half.
I think the game you watched, he was like a plus seven, believe it or not.
He started slow, but he
must have been the second.
Strong.
It must have been the second. The Bulls had a great second quarter. The first quarter, oof, ugly.
3-1-2. That's pretty sad, actually.
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.